All right, Joshua chapter 6 is where I'm going to be, and I invite you to join me there if you would. If not, I can't force you to, but, you know, that's where I'm going to be. So, and if I actually connect this to the thing at the back, you'll be able to see the screen. That's not the soundboard's fault. So, there we go. Is that better? Look at that. All right, so last week, we left off around the middle of chapter 6. We were just talking about the reality that the plan of God required the same thing that God requires of us today. It's been put, you know, by the songwriter as trust and obey. But God requires of us faith and obedience. What was the plan of God for Jericho? March around the city and go home. Now, I read this last week, but I didn't, you know, draw it out necessarily. But look with me in verse number 10. Let's back up to verse 9. The armed men went before the priests that blew with the trumpets, and the rearward came after the ark, the priests going on and blowing with the trumpets. Verse 10, Joshua commanded the people, "You shall not shout nor make any noise with your voice, neither shall any word proceed out of your mouth." So, look at then at verse number 13. The seven priests bearing seven trumpets of ram's horn before the Lord went on continually and blew with the trumpets, and the armed men went before them. So, I mean, it looks like in verse 9 and verse 13, it's very possible that there was maybe some sounding of the trumpet as they marched around the city of Jericho. You know, We tend to focus on the don't say a word, and we talked about that some last week too. But it's very possible that there was some sort of a signal from the trumpets as they marched around the city. The way it's phrased in verse 9 and verse 13, you know, would lend itself very easily to that. It's also possible that, you know, that's out of chronological order, which they did sometimes. But, you know, I think maybe there was something to that. You know, whether it's keeping time or, you know, they give signals and marching orders and that kind of thing, you know. But if there was any sound at all as they marched around the city, it was just simply the signals from the trumpet, right? The signal from the trumpet, you know, that was kind of a universal mechanism. Where the college is in Lattimore, you have the volunteer fire department right across the street. So it's always amusing in the fall, the first time that siren goes off, probably deafens Esther where she lives right behind. That thing's probably no more than a football field from their house. But that siren goes off. They're like, "What does that mean?" I'm like, "I don't know. Could be severe thunderstorm, could be tornado, could be nuclear attack." I mean, it's the same siren for everything. You have no idea, you know, what it means other than there's an emergency, there's a problem, you know. But they, with the trumpet, they could give different sounds or, you know, maybe give different signals, but that's how they give the signal to march or attack or give directions on prearranged signals and that kind of thing. So if you're inside the city walls of Jericho and you see soldiers and you hear trumpets, what do you think is coming? An attack. I mean, that would be the standard expectation, right? So you hear trumpet, you see soldiers marching around, and then they leave. Okay, that was weird. And verse 14 says, "The second day they compassed the city once and returned into the camp, so did they 6 days." So for 6 days, that's what they did. They marched around the city, they went home. And, you know, you had to be, you know, if you put yourself in the shoes of the people inside Jericho, that had to be somewhat unnerving. Verse 15, "Came to pass on the seventh day, they rose early about the dawning of the day." Now, the seventh day here just simply means that it was the seventh day since they started marching. Okay? Did they start on a Sunday, and so then the seventh day that they marched was on a Sabbath day? There's nothing in the text that tells us that. But I've read commentators that try to make that argument, that it was on the Sabbath, and it took them this many hours to march around the city. And so by the time they got done marching around the city and taking a rest break and everything, it would have been after 6 p.m., and so it was technically no longer the Sabbath, and so then they could go fight and not violate the Sabbath. And I'm like, you had too much time on your hands. You needed to have something different to write so you could justify publishing your commentary, okay? But It just says the seventh day. They started on day one. They did this for 7 days. So if they did it for 7 days, logic says that one of those days that they marched was a Sabbath day. Whether it was in the first day, whether it's in the middle of the week, whether it's on the end. One of those days was a Sabbath day. Why did God not punish them? Because God gave them a direct order to do this. So that was not, you know, in God's eyes, considered a violation of the Sabbath laws as he'd given them. Okay? Verse 15, it came to pass on the seventh day, they rose early about the dawning of the day and compassed the city after the same manner 7 times. Only on that day they compassed the city 7 times. It came to pass at the seventh time, when the priests blew with the trumpets, Joshua said unto the people, shout, for the Lord hath given you the city. And the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein, to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourselves accursed. When you take of the accursed thing and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it, but all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord, they shall come into the treasury of the Lord. So that's the instruction. So you have patient obedience for 6 days. They march around, no words being spoken. If there's any noise at all, it's simply a signal from a trumpet, and then they go home. And then you see here in the rest of the chapter a historic victory, which is a promise kept by God. All right, so what do we see here with this? We see the walking. They walked for 7 days. All right, we see the shouting. When Joshua gave the command, Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord hath given you the city. Now, if you look, verse 17, 18, and 19 is parenthetical. Okay? I mean, to me, that's not the way I would write it. I would say, now, here's the prior instructions that were given. Right now, this is the order of what happened on that day. That's the way we would hopefully tell stories. But you have Joshua in verse 17 told the people to shout. And then verses 17, 18, and 19, you have parenthetical instructions. You know, everything belongs to the Lord. You're not keeping anything for yourself. The only people we're keeping alive is Rahab and her family because we promised a trade. They saved the lives of our people. We spare their lives. All right, and then you get to verse 20. So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets. So you got the parentheticals that we'll come back to, but then you have the shouting. The people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets, and it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet and the people shouted with a great shout that the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. So you have the walking, you have the shouting, you have the falling. Now, what was special about the shout? Did they have a certain chant that they repeated 50 times? You know, move a bead on a little string each time they said it. What was special about that shout? Nothing, except that it was obedience to what God had commanded. Okay, if there were any sort of military or scientific advantage, you know that would be replicated. It wasn't anything special other than they shouted in faith, trusting that God was going to do what he said he was going to do. And then the statement here is that the walls fell down flat. Okay? Does that mean that they were vertical like this and they crumbled down like this? Like you see sometimes with a planned explosion, they're going to demolish a building and it kind of just all falls down in a pile right where it was? I don't know. Does that mean it fell down outward? But it, you know, either way, it says it fell down flat. They didn't have to climb over them. They could walk straight in, which is what the next phrase says. The people went up straight in the city before them. Did it just crumble? Did it fall flat? I don't know. There's been some recent publications to suggest they found a section of the walls of Jericho, and it seems like they fell outward. And it did, you know, God caused it to fall down, you know, into ground level so that they could just walk straight into the city on basically level ground without having to climb over a massive rubble and that kind of thing. What is that? That's a miracle of God. What is crossing the Jordan? It's a miracle of God. What is, you know, the falling down of the walls? That's a miracle of God. You know, all of this, God wants them to see that when you conquer this land, it's because I did it, not because you did anything special. Why do I point that out? Because we need that reminder too, right? We think, especially if we get a little experience in life, we think, okay, I know how to handle this one. There might be something I haven't seen yet, but I know how to handle this one. And the truth is, it's always the Lord working on our behalf if anything gets accomplished. So you have in verse 20, the walls fell down flat so that the people went straight up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. Okay, so then I'm going to skip verse 21 and 22. I'm skip verse 21. We'll come back to it. Verse number 22. Joshua had said unto the two men that had spied out the country, go into the harlot's house and bring out thence the woman and all that she hath, as ye swear unto her. And the young men that were spies went in, brought out Rahab and her father, mother, brethren, all that she had. And they brought out all her kindred and left them without the camp. Now, let's rewind a little bit. When they first met Rahab and her family, where was her house? On the wall. Okay, so either literally built into the wall or, you know, right next to the wall where they could climb up on top of the wall. I think it was built into the wall because they hung that, you know, scarlet cord out the window and so it could be seen as, you know, as Israel's marching around the city for 6 days and then seven times the seventh day, you could see exactly where that was. So God spared their lives. I mean, we're not specifically told here, but it's reasonable to suppose that that section of the wall where their house was did not crumble when the rest of them did. And, you know, because God spared their lives, but and they did bring them out. Now, when they brought them out, why did they leave them outside of the camp? Because they were spies? Why did they leave them outside the camp? Because that was, you know, they were Gentiles, they were considered unclean, and, you know, before they could be brought into the fellowship, you know, there was a process of purification according to Mosaic law and that kind of thing. But that's why the text here says that they brought them out, but they left them without the camp of Israel. All right, so you have the falling, then you have the sparing. That is what we just discussed there with the keeping of the promise to Rahab. And then we have the consecrating. All right, now we'll back up to verse 21. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man, woman, young, old, ox, sheep, ass, with the edge of the sword. Verse 24, they burnt the city with fire and all that was therein, only the silver, gold, and vessels of brass they brought in the treasury of the Lord. All right, if you back up to verse 17, the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live and all that are with her in the house. Verse 18, ye shall in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest you make yourselves accursed when you take the accursed thing. So in verse 17 and 18, you have the term accursed. In verse number 21, you have the phrase utterly destroyed. Those are all, you know, related terms. Okay? The word accursed in verses 17 and 18, very literal rendering of the word, it's also used in other places as consecrated. That's why I use that term. It's because it's not consecrated in the sense of sanctified, but it was in the sense of being set apart for a specific use. Okay, ladies, some of you may have some things that are set apart for a specific use. You've got your own fancy dishes or china or mom's or grandma's china, and that gets used for Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, you know, special occasions. You got things that are set aside for a specific use. Guys, you might have a general set of screwdrivers or tools that, you know, somebody in the house needs it. You know, that's what they use. But then you got your good ones that are set aside somewhere else, and the teenage boys are not supposed to touch those. You know, those are set aside for a specific use. You know, Brother Jim probably has a pair of waders that's set aside for a specific use because he likes to go up to the mountains and go fishing in those cold water streams. So he wears the waders to help with that. But what, you know, to be set aside for a particular use, we understand what that means. Okay, you have something that's reserved for a particular use. A young lady, when she's going to be a bride, you know, spends a lot of effort and time and money on a dress for her wedding, right? And then does she put that in the rotation with the Sunday dresses to wear to church? No. Why? It was set apart for a specific use. Okay, so the idea of this is to be set apart or to be dedicated. But it's the same word that's translated accursed. Okay? And there's a good reason for that. Okay? The idea is this. It was set apart for the Lord. Okay? The principle here that we see in this is the principle that the first fruits belong to the Lord. Okay? The first fruits, the best of, the first of the harvest, we sometimes call that, sometimes connect that with the tithe. Okay? But the first portion belongs to the Lord. Okay? In other instances, as we read through Joshua, and I'm sure you're all familiar, they were allowed to take the garments or the silver and gold. They were allowed to take the ox and sheep and the animals and that kind of thing. But the first one belonged to the Lord. It was set aside for the Lord. Okay? Which is why we read the explanation in verse number 24 that they burnt the city with fire and all that was therein. Only the vessels of silver, gold, brass, and iron did they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. So the parts that God had said belonged to him, were set aside. They were put into basically where they kept the offerings, the treasury of the house of the Lord. Everything else was destroyed. Why? Because it belonged to the Lord. Okay, the idea was it belongs to the Lord and nobody else is going to use it for their personal use. If you remember, most of you will probably remember this from your Bible reading and personal study, but there was a time when David was on the run from Saul, and David said, man, I wish I could get a drink from the well at Bethlehem, from back home. And some of his mighty men went and broke through the army of the Philistines, and they brought him back to water. And then David said, this is the blood of the men. It's too precious for me to drink it. What did he do with it? He poured it out. He poured it out on the ground. Now, we might look at that and say, boy, that was disrespectful. That was wasteful. But the idea was he made it a drink offering. He poured it out on the ground saying, this is reserved for the Lord and no man is going to partake of this. This belongs to the Lord. Nobody else is going to use it. Well, that's the idea here of destroying everything. It wasn't to be kept for their personal use. The principle was the first part belonged to the Lord, so we're going to destroy it and no man is going to use it for personal use. Okay, that's why it's called accursed. It's called accursed because, I don't have it on here. My last point here, you have walking, shouting, falling, sparing, consecrating, and my last point that I guess I didn't put on the bottom of the slide here is stealing. When Achan took that which did not belong to him, he was actually stealing from the Lord. God said, this is my portion, and he stole it from God when he did that. So in verse 17 and 18, it says the city's accursed. The idea is that it's devoted to the Lord. It's set aside. And when you take of that, you're in essence stealing from God. Verse 18, ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest you make yourselves accursed when you take of the accursed thing and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. There you go. You have the warning ahead of time. That's the second time that connection's dropped, Brother Mark. I don't know why, but I reconnected a minute ago when you had stepped out. It shows I'm connected, but the signal dropped. If I turn it off and then reconnect, it'll come back up in a minute. Anyway, but the idea of it being accursed is that it was set apart to the Lord. In that sense, it was sacred. It was accursed if you stole from God and tried to use that which is sacred for personal or common use. Okay? So, that's the explanation here. So, in verse 24, they burnt the city with fire and all that was therein. Now, any of you have fire bugs in your family? Hopefully, no arsonists. But, people that like fire, right? Our son's with the volunteer fire department. And, every time he goes over there and says, I'm hoping there's a fire. I'm like, son, as long as you didn't start it, Because he's made a comment a time or two. Man, we hadn't had a call all week. I'm tempted to start a fire so we can have a call. I'm like, don't do that, son. Don't do that. And we're just cutting up, But You know, there are some that are like, yeah, let's build a fire. But you know, there are others that are looking at that going, I could have used that. Miss Marilyn's not here today, but you think Marilyn would have looked at the stuff in Jericho and said, I could use that and I could do something with this. And yeah, exactly. And you know, you have the both extremes where you're like, I could do something with that. I could keep that. That would look great in my living room, you know. So there are people that are going, what are we doing? And there are people that are going, yeah, you know, they burned it. Why? It's the same idea as that drink offering that was poured out to the Lord. This is reserved for God's use only, and we're going to make it so that man can't use it himself for common use. So they burned the city with fire. That would have included the animals, you know, the cattle and such. None of that was to be reserved for themselves. None of the other personal possessions. The only thing that was kept went into the treasury of the house of the Lord. That was the gold, silver, and the metals that were usable there that are listed in verse 24. Verse 25, Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive and her father's household and all that she had, and she dwelleth in Israel even unto this day. So according to that verse, she's still alive today. Okay, obviously not. What does that mean? At the time of the writing, at the time the book of Joshua was written, her family was still living there in Israel. I'm not going to reconnect it this time. I'm just going to leave it. So, anyway, at the time the book of Joshua was written, Rahab and her family still lived among the people. Okay, verse 26, Joshua adjured them at that time, saying, cursed be the man before the Lord that riseth up and buildeth the city Jericho. He shall lay the foundation thereof in his firstborn, and in his youngest son he shall set up the gates thereof. The idea is his oldest son would die at the beginning of the project, and his youngest son would die at the end of the project. And later on, in the accounts of the history of Israel, you see that very thing. For years, it laid dormant, but eventually it was rebuilt, and the man that led the project to rebuild it did suffer the judgment of God. But this was a public pronouncement by Joshua in the hearing of the people. Verse 27, so the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was noised throughout the country. You think? I mean, you think if something like that happened today, word wouldn't get around? Man, did you hear what happened to Gastonia? You hear what happened to Charlotte? You know, the walls fell, you know, it got captured, it was burned, nobody's left alive. You think the word like that would get around? Sure it did. But you remember when the spies first went in? What did Rahab admit to the spies? How long had they been afraid that Israel was coming? They said, we heard what your God did to the Red Sea, and we've been scared ever since then that you were coming here. I mean, 40 years they've been dreading this, right? So now, when they come up to the border and they take out Sihon and Og, before they cross the border, that word gets across. And then their God dries up the river for, you know, probably a 30-mile stretch or more, and they cross the river on dry land, and then everybody's really scared. And then you march around Jericho for a week, and then they shout and blow the trumpets, and the walls fall down flat. You think the word of that gets around to Ai and Bethel and, it was not called Jerusalem at the time, but, you know, all of the countryside? Sure, that word gets around. And, you know, sometimes, depending on who the invading army was, they would capture people, they would take them as slaves, they would make them servants, that kind of thing. What did Joshua do with the very first city that they conquered? They wiped them all out. So what do you think, if you're living in one of the regional cities, I mean, what are the thoughts that are going through your head? Okay, now maybe you're unrealistically confident. Okay, maybe there might be somebody in here today that's pretty good at worrying. Okay, I won't ask you to raise your hand, but we might have at least one in here. Okay. Human nature is we're going to worry about that kind of stuff. So what are you thinking? Oh, great, that's what they're going to do to us. Right? They're going to come in, they're going to wipe us out, they're going to kill men, women, children. You know, they're not just wiping out the soldiers, they wiped out the moms, the teenagers, the kids, the babies, the grandparents. They wiped out everybody. Nobody left alive except Rahab's family to keep a promise, but that wasn't going to be the part that made the news. The part that made the news was they killed everybody and they burned the city with fire. These people are ruthless. We're in trouble. I mean, that's the word that's going out, right? I mean, part of it was God said, this belongs to me. He was teaching them the principle of the first fruits. The first portion belongs to the Lord. The rest of it they used to live on. God was doing all kinds of things here, but I think part of it was that fear factor, if I could say it that way, of putting the fear in the hearts of the people, this is what's going to happen to us. All right, you know the story, so it's not like come back tomorrow and hear the rest of the story. You know the story. What happens in chapter 7 and 8? Well, because of Achan's sin, God's blessing wasn't on them and they lost the next battle. What did that do to, if I could say it this way, the fear that God had allowed to come on the people? You know, that would have maybe given them a glimmer of hope. Why? Because of disobedience, because of sin on the part of the people. Okay? But what God was doing, you remember when God dried up the river, as soon as they got across, he said, Joshua, the people have not obeyed in the matter of circumcision. You need to do this. And they did it, but everybody around them left them alone because God had put fear in their hearts. I think God's continuing to do the same kind of thing. And they kind of got in God's way, if I could use a common expression, by you know what Achan did and by not seeking the Lord's counsel with the attack at Ai and so forth. But it was very specifically spelled out before the battle, before they ever went in. Everything here is devoted to the Lord. It belongs to the Lord. This is God's portion. Nobody's going to use it. Silver, gold, brass, iron, that goes in the house of the Lord. Nothing is kept for personal use. You think Achan understood that? Of course he did. If he did not understand it, why would he have dug in the earth and covered it up with a rug? I mean, he hid it because he knew he wasn't supposed to do that. He just thought he could get away with it. But the whole picture here in verse 27 is summed up. The Lord was with Joshua and his fame was noised throughout the country. Everybody heard about it. Everybody, you know, got the memo. They're all scared to death. So you know what happened in the next couple of chapters. Chapter 8 and 9, the Gibeonites decided we're going to throw ourselves on their mercy. See if we can, you know, get them to spare our lives. And so they lied to them and eventually they found out about it. And Joshua said, we promised you by our God that we wouldn't kill you, so we're not going to kill you. We're going to make you servants. They're like, that's fine as long as we get to live. We'll be drawers of water and hewers of wood and, you know, we'll be servants. At least we get to live. Okay? So some of them did that. In other cases, as we go through the story, you'll see that the surrounding cities came together in a coalition of 4, 5, 6 together. It talks about the king of this and the king of this and the king of this, but it's really smaller groups. It wasn't nations. It's more like cities or, you know, small regions, not even as big as like Cleveland County, I don't think, as for sake of comparison. But eventually, some of them were like, man, I hope they just leave us alone. I hope they stay away. Some of them were like, well, we're going to reach out to them, see if they'll make a peace treaty with us. Others said, well, if we're going to die, let's die fighting. And, you know, they band together and they try to go and fight against Israel. But nonetheless, what promise does this harken back to? What promise did God make to Joshua that's recorded for us in Joshua chapter 1? Remember? Starts with as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. Has God kept that promise? Well, yeah. I mean, we saw the same thing in chapter 3 when God parted the Jordan River. It says, on that day, God magnified Joshua. Here, his fame was noised throughout the country. I mean, yes, God has definitely kept that promise. God has put his power and his stamp of approval on Joshua's obedience. And now the people all around hear about it. And then what happens? You know, because of Achan's sin, it got messed up. Now let me ask you this. Was that a permanent scenario? Okay, was Israel like permanently out of God's favor because Achan sinned? No, but that had to be dealt with, right? And that had to be dealt with before they were going to enjoy God's blessings again. So in chapter 7 now, we move into the scenario with Achan. We see the disobedience to God's command, but I'm just saying this. Sometimes if we mess up, we think, okay, well, that's it. I'm done, you know, whatever. That's not, you know, the Bible over and over again says the Lord is long-suffering, gracious, merciful. You know, sometimes we think, okay, well, I'm done. You know, I may as well, you know, pack it in. That's not the case, but we do have to deal with our sin God's way. Achan tried to hide it. That didn't work. He had to deal with it God's way. But chapter 7, verse 1, the children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing. Now remember, why is it called accursed? It's not because Babylonian garments were accursed. Okay? I have heard people, you know, try to make those kind of... It's not because it was a Babylonian garment. It wasn't because of the fashion label that was on it. It was accursed because it was dedicated to the Lord. It was reserved for God's use only, not for common use. He stole from God and tried to use it for his personal use instead. That is why he was accursed. Or that's why it's called the accursed thing. He committed a trespass in the accursed thing, for Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed thing, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against the children of Israel. Interesting. If you and I had God's omniscience, what would we have done with Achan? Now, I'm looking across the room, and I know most of the personalities in here. Some of you would have been like, well, you know, let's talk to him, see if he'll make it right, you know. And others are like, lightning bolt, you're done, right? Now, the Lord's anger was kindled because of his disobedience. But God gave him time, and there was even an opportunity for him to come clean, and he didn't until he was forced to. But here, the anger of the Lord was kindled, but he didn't zap him immediately. Why am I saying that? Because whether it's my own situation, and I, you know, tend to discount the Lord's forgiveness, or whether it's somebody else, and I wonder, God, they wronged me, why don't you zap them already? The Lord just kind of reminds me, well, I didn't do that to you in this other situation. But God, it didn't go unnoticed. Verse 1, they took the accursed thing. Verse 2, Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven on the east side of Bethel, and spake unto them, saying, go up, view the country. Now there's a precedent for this. They went up and viewed Ai. They returned to Joshua and said unto him, let not all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and smite Ai, and make not all the people labor together, for they are but few. So they went up thither of the people about 3,000 men. And they asked the Lord, and he said, yes, go with 3,000. If that's in your version, you need a different Bible. Right? Where did they seek counsel of the Lord? They didn't. Okay, in one word, describe the attitude that says, we don't need to send everybody, let's just send 2,000 or 3,000. They're small. In one word, how could we describe that? Self, arrogance, pride, yes. All overconfidence, all of the above, yes. Self-dependence for sure, right? Man, look what we just did to Jericho. Time out. Look what God just did to Jericho, right? We just need to send 2,000 or 3,000 people down there. They did not ask the Lord. As soon as Joshua begins to seek the Lord here in chapter 7, did God tell him what needed to happen? Absolutely. I mean, as soon as Joshua fell on his face and began to seek the Lord, I love it. It's verse number 10, the Lord said unto Joshua, get thee up. Chapter 7, verse 10, you need to read that with some voice inflection. Get up. What are you doing on the ground, boy? See, as soon as Joshua started to pray, God said, no. That point is moot until we deal with this one, okay? I tend to think that if he had asked the Lord's guidance, hey, Lord, you know, what should we do? The men recommended 3,000. What do we do? Maybe the Lord would have told him, or maybe, just maybe, he gets no answer and he goes to see why he doesn't get an answer, because we see examples of that in other places too. And eventually God says, well, this has got to be dealt with. They didn't ask God's direction. Why am I pointing that out? Because it's easy for us to fall in the same trap of self or pride or arrogance or overconfidence or, you know, not waiting on the Lord's direction or timing or all of those things. But you have here a tremendous victory and then, you know, a knuckleheaded decision that took some of the shine off that. Things haven't changed in 3,000 years, have they? We're still good at, you know, the Lord does something great. We're still good at, you know, messing up something. But when they confessed and dealt with the sin, what did God do? He blessed them again. They went back to Ai. They got victory. It wasn't like a permanent, okay, I'm never going to help you again thing, but they just had to deal with it God's way. So we'll deal more with chapter 7 next week, but it just the connections here I think are important to keep the flow in our mind as we go. Let's close in a word of prayer. Thank you, Lord, for today. Thank you for your word. I pray now that you'd bless in the preaching service to come in every aspect. And Lord, we pray for those that would like to be here and aren't, that you'd strengthen and encourage them.